Hey there, hey there. You are watching the Q&A episode of Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. Thanks for tuning in. It is Monday, April 27th, 2026. The regular Deprogram show comes to you live on YouTube and Rumble Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. But Mondays and Wednesdays, we do a 12 o'clock, 12 noon Eastern supplemental question and answer show. Anything and everything goes. Well, not really. If you're a jerk, we won't answer your question. Or if we're just bored by your question, we won't answer your question. Or if you're obnoxious, we won't answer your question. But really, most things go. So if you have a question for JT, you have a question for me, you have a question for both of us, a comment, anything, this is a free fire zone. Come on in and we will talk about it. We can talk about the news of the day. We can talk about the, you know, what's coming down the pike. We can answer your advice questions. We can do anything you want. And we can, of course, talk about anything and everything. Anything you want to add to that, JT?
No. Yes, agree. Pretty much anything. I mean,
oh, and also, Jeff, sorry. And if you also have a question or a comment for producer Robbie West, feel free to do that as well. Robbie, before we get into it with the Q&A, do we have any ads in the queue? Or maybe I could pull those up, right?
Yeah, just click on the dollar sign right there up under the private chat.
All right, let me see what we got here.
We got a buffet.
I do have a buffet, but then there's all these ads that have like, that they want your video. What is that about? I've always wanted to ask you.
So they want your video?
Yeah. So you don't need to do the video. So what you can do, you can, so if you click on accept and start,
yep.
If there's one that's available, it'll just come up with the text. Yep. What the video is for is that if you don't want to read the script, you mm-hmm. can make a personalized video that you can play in lieu of reading the script.
Interesting.
Is it a must do or is it allowed to do?
It's an either or. Personally, I prefer reading the ads because the videos, for one thing, Rumble Studio is already kind of clunky.
Mm.
And so the last thing I want to do is put in another moving part into an already clunky system, kind of like Donald Trump's brain. So I just had to keep things simple because I'm a very slow Southern boy.
All right, so I do see an ad. I bet you guys can probably guess what it's for, and off we go.
It's probably for this right here.
Yeah, it indeed it is. Here we go. All right, still haven't tried the 1775 starter, 1775 coffee. Now it's your shot. The 1775 starter kit just dropped. Only 1,000 units. You're getting the bold, dark roast that hits hard, the smooth, medium roast, and the vitality mushroom coffee. For clean energy and laser focus, no crash, all single origin, small batch, toxin-free and mold-free. Plus, you're also getting a gold spoon clip because freedom isn't scooped with plastic. A frother strong enough to stir up your coffee and your mother-in-law's opinions. And a black 1775 tumbler, $170 worth of coffee and gear, yours for $99. This is for the ones who've been watching 1775 blow up on Rumble, wondering if it's actually worth it. Spoiler, it is. Go to 1775coffee.com. 1775coffee.com/studio and grab your starter kit before they're gone. Bold beans, clean fuel, and a morning routine that stands for something just like Rumble does.
I'm curious, Ted. So my mom loves the mushroom coffee, by the way. I don't know if it's 1776, but she likes it. If a marriage is falling apart, should the mother-in-laws get involved? When you were recounting that, I kept thinking to myself, yeah, it would have been nice if my mother-in-law took a better position on me, right?
Really?
And a position on the marriage. Should they get involved? Like, meaning, if somebody I know is in a relationship and I'm close to them, and I see that relationship tanking, do you say anything about the relationship?
God,
I mean, this is way off the rails.
Look, honestly, I would, I got to say, there's another life in which I would just do relationship stuff and just do that kind of stuff in these kind of ethical questions. I think it really depends. I mean, when my marriage was falling apart, I remember my mother-in-law, who I never thought was a huge fan because of my being white and my ex-wife was, Taiwanese, and she as I always like to joke, is probably still Taiwanese. I didn't think she was a big fan. And I remember she told her daughter, my wife at the time, you should be careful about the way you treat Ted. He's a good man, and good men are hard to find, and he's kind to you, and you don't really always deserve it. So, you should shape up. And I remember, like, obviously it didn't make a difference, but, and she didn't listen to her mom. But I got to tell you, man, I still think of that, and it really warms my heart to think that, like, there was someone on my side on the other team. I think if things had worked out, it would have helped me reintegrate patch things up, because I would have been able to be like, well, you know, like, I'm going to have trouble with her, but I've got her. I know her mom's on my side, and they're pulling for it. I think I think there's a reason why when you have a formal marriage ceremony that's outside of City Hall, and you go and attest in front of your synagogue or your church or whatever to your community, like, you stand up in front of, 100 of your nearest and dearest friends, and you say, I take this woman and she takes you, that you're, the reason that the community is there is because it's kind of like, it does take a village to keep a marriage going too. Right. And if it's just the two of you and your stupid nuclear family trying to work it out, and you're trying to be everything to each other, roommate, business partner, best friend, lover, everything, and you're having trouble, if you feel like the whole community is, like, on board with you, I think it helps. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess I agree. I mean, so my situation was slightly different. I didn't have that support from family, if that makes sense. And when the marriage was falling apart, put it this way, the marriage ended. My mom's going to hate me saying this. My ex-wife reached out, effectively saying, hey, I want to maintain a relationship with you, despite the fact that I left your son. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's my godson says, hey, you're very mature to accept that. It's like, dude, it's my mom. Like, what am I supposed to do, right?
She's an adult. She's a grown-ass woman, right?
She's a grown woman, right? I may feel some kind of way about issues of loyalty, but it's my mom. So there's no way out that box. And the reality of it is, I brought the ex-wife in to be very close with my mom over the course of the marriage. So it's like you're kind of stuck with the momentum of this thing that just needs to kind of die out on its own, that you can't really do anything with, can't really say anything about, feel something about. You love your mom, right? So mine was a little bit different. Her mom didn't think that way. Her mom took this perspective of, being pissed off at me. Effectively, my daughter is angry at you, and so I'm backing my daughter and being angry at you. And anything that was going on with me in real terms was somewhat ignored and downplayed. I mean, for fuck's sake, I had a stroke over the course of that relationship. I had lost eyesight in part of my eye. My arm was all screwed up. I had, over the course of the time period of COVID, I never got COVID, but it was a bunch of other stuff that went on for the course of that year that wrecked me medically. And me, if I'm being bluntly honest, like to be left to my own devices when shit goes awry. And so I didn't want to be bothered, even with the wife. Now, I realized after the fact, from watching Real Housewives, to be honest, that there's a better way of dealing with stuff like that. And communication was part of an issue for me, but also for her in that marriage. I don't know if I was in a mindset to hear that, if that makes sense. At the point where I realized the marriage was over with, that's when I woke up and was like, oh, wait, I see what's going on. I've been distant. You've been non-communicative. We both have been dicks to each other. We need to put this aside and work this out. But at that point, it was too late, right? At that point, it was like, well, I'm out. I'm leaving. And it's like, okay, things have gone bad for 1 year or 2 years. We've been together for 10. Are you really calling it quits on this? And I realized I never, I thought this was going to be forever. Even if it meant I was miserable, I thought it meant it would be just forever. Mm-hmm. Her mom and her family dealt with divorces, meaning her mom was divorced from her husband. Mm-hmm. So she had a model of divorce. I did not, because my family didn't necessarily divorce me, but they would stay in marriages that sucked forever. So it's, I don't know, man, it's kind of hard. I don't know if I would have actually heard. I don't even know how the family would have gotten involved in it. So I don't know. I don't know. I agree with your take, though. It does take a village to raise a child.
It's fucking complicated for sure. All right, so let's get into some questions here. Okay, I don't know what this means. Someone can probably tell me. Covering JT's face is a red line, bro. I don't know what that means.
I think they're saying because the sunlight is streaming through and it's blocking, it's creating shadow.
I see it fine.
It's because of the ad. Whenever you do the ad, a QR code pops up on the screen.
Oh.
God.
How dare you? How dare you, sir?
How dare you? Well,
that's a microaggression. You cover a black man with a white ad. How dare you?
I know, right?
How dare you?
It's like, rather this war of southern, what is it? War of northern aggression.
the war of solar aggression.
You're right. I know, right? It's fine.
Okay. Here's a political one. Why does the U.S. want to go into Cuba?
The U.S. has wanted to go into Cuba for a very long time because it's outside of our let's say wheelhouse. Put it this way: every country that the U.S. that has overthrown U.S. authority in those countries, the U.S. has never forgiven. Whether you talk about Iran and the Iranian Revolution, or whether you're talking about Cuba, we have never forgiven them. It's almost like the Lannister always pays his debts. It's like you're always out there trying to go after what you consider to be enemies, despite the fact that these countries haven't done anything to you. Not to mention, if you think about it, the Cuban Missile Crisis. You got effectively Cuba, backed by the Soviet Union, holding off an empire to a standstill. Yes, it might have ended the world, but held them off to a standstill. Yeah, we don't like to give up on properties that we consider ours. And in our case, Cuba overthrew the Batista government that was in office. Mm-hmm. At least that's my take. You're a better student.
I agree with you. I mean, also, I think, look, it's a simple matter of colonialism, right? I mean, we came into Cuba as a result of the Spanish-American War, or the Spanish-American War is what allowed us to capture Cuba. And right. Even though it became nominally independent, I guess in the 30s, it was always a vassal state. And I think, look, understandably, given the politics of the era, right? I mean, in an era of colonialism, this giant tourist island that grows sugarcane 90 miles off the coast of our country is obviously going to be in America's sphere of influence right. From the mentality of U.S. presidents. So, you can't but look at it and salivate and think, like, there's a yummy little tidbit we'd like to have all for ourselves, right? I mean, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems so vulnerable and yet not. I mean, even now, like right. With gas stuff, trying to effectively put in a puppet by destroying the government itself using economic warfare to do so. I mean, the lights have been on in Cuba for like hours, going on for weeks.
Yeah. So, yeah. They're tough people.
Yeah.
And I mean, ironically, the years of abuse have made them tough, just like with the Iranians, right? The years of sanctions. I mean, it's so interesting, right? Like I love the law of unintended consequences, right? So for example, Iran, they encircled Iran with military bases in Iraq and then they occupied Afghanistan for years. And they basically were like, oh, now we've got the Iranians right where we want them. Well, now they've got us right where we want them, where they want us, because our military bases are so close that they can attack our military bases. Similarly, the Iranians, have been subject to brutal economic sanctions. So have the Cubans. So that means now it's easier for them to withstand our sanctions and our war than it would be if we hadn't toughened them up for all those years. It's fascinating.
Russia also. I mean, all those sanctions that was passed on Russia effectively made them ultimately self-sufficient to a large degree.
Russia's a great example. Yeah. Thanks for the super chat here from Insight Vector. Wasn't sure I was going to stay watching after John left, but you couldn't have picked a better co-host. I've been watching JT since his Brexit obsession. Great to see his health doing better.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I do appreciate that.
Could not
agree more. Medical treatment. I wasn't even sure to come back this soon. Because part of the reason that I got back into the States was to effectively deal with medical stuff, right? And it's unclear whether it was going to lead over the course of time, like if it was going to be other procedures, surgeries, or something like that. But I'm here. It's kicking ass. I'm awake. So I appreciate that. Thank you. And yeah, I was obsessed with Brexit. I love British politics. God, I love British politics, especially.
What was your obsession with Brexit? I mean, my obsession with it was you literally. It's kind of like how the American colonies, like really, when we wanted independence from Great Britain, it puzzled George III because America had the best deal in the empire. We paid the lowest taxes. So it's like, wait, why are they pissed off? Why isn't someone else pissed off? And it's like, similarly with Brexit, I was like, wait, you guys have the best deal. You're not part of the currency union. You have more autonomy than any other EU nation. You really only benefit from this. What's your beef here? Why are you pissed as opposed to, say, the French or the Italians?
I was fascinated by it. I mean, like Boris Johnson, I was fascinated by it politically, right? For that one part, that reason, because it was very clear that Britain was going to take it in the ass when they pulled up.
Yeah,
Like Fortress
and they
Britain had
have.
existed. The second thing was the arguments that were being laid out in the referendum and in the election, because these things were happening almost in tandem. And you got Boris Johnson arguing freedom. That was the argument, right?
Freedom
Freedom.
from what? From EU
Well,
oppression?
again, from European tyranny. That was the way Boris Johnson framed that argument. And to make it even worse, when they were having the referendum and the referendum went through saying, yes, the majority of the population is okay with this by a thin margin, Johnson was like, this is about freedom and democracy. Do you believe in freedom and democracy or not? And that was the way he framed it. Jeremy Corbyn, who was a Brexiteer before Brexit was a thing, was cowed into this weird position of this mealy mouth. Well, yeah, the referendum is this, but we were going to talk about healthcare. Dude, this is not a healthcare election. This is like it became a clear idea for the referendum. Like, even if you didn't agree with Brexit, there was a referendum. Do you believe in democracy or not? And one Brexiteer, who was a Brexiteer before Brexit was a thing, couldn't say yes, or couldn't say it directly with his chest. Boris Johnson was ribbing him over and over and over again. In fact, Jeremy Corbyn abdicated from making a choice on Brexit. That's how weak and ridiculous that election became. Oh, I was fascinated by that election. Fascinated.
I personally,
Well,
I'm sorry.
it's very no, nothing to be sorry for. Is the Central Asia trip still happening? Guatemalan immigrant wants to know. I haven't heard from John since the day that he called me an hour before our last show, so I'm assuming not.
Wait, he was going to.
We were going to go to Central Asia together in
Really?
August. Yeah. But
What country?
Uzbekistan, sorry, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan.
How long are you going?
We're probably like 2, 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Would you like company on that trip?
Well, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I wasn't sure I was still going to go, but
Oh,
yeah.
fair
But I
enough.
mean, yeah,
Well, let me
John's
know.
spot is definitely empty. Yeah, let's talk.
Well, let me know if you want to go.
Yeah,
We'll
we could do
talk.
the show from there too.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Okay. All right. We will talk about that. That's a happy result of this. Of this Q&A. All right. Pluripol, didn't we get kicked out of the Philippines?
Yes. Well, ish, kind of. I mean, kicked out depends on what you mean by kicked out. Does the US have influence in the Philippines? Well, yeah, they have influence in the Philippines. That's why the Philippines keep sticking around with China, if you remember, right?
Bigly,
But
yeah.
there's that shoal
I mean, the
of like.
Philippines definitely fought us like tooth and nail to get us out.
Yeah, but if you look at what is happening in regards to the way the US has been pivoting against China, effectively doing the same strategy that they did with Iran, but this time with China. So you have the Philippines, you have Japan, you have South Korea. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the US can take control of South Korean military in case of a military conflict. But basically, you're doing a very similar thing with China, this notion of trying to surround it. Philippines is another one of those countries that effectively is working with the US on it. Now, the Philippines may have their own wants in this, right? But they're clearly one of the tools that the US is using or has at its disposal in regards to this kind of war or this strategy to circumvent or surround China. I mean, I could be wrong. Fact check me on this. But everything I just said right there was true. What the Filipino government is entirely in line with the U.S. was working with the U.S. for their own interests. That's a different matter.
It's a vassal state. I mean, it is. I mean, the thing about the, I think the thing that take, if you're Filipino, you're kind of like, yeah, the America, we're independent. The Americans aren't, we're no longer a colony, but the Americans have kind of made clear we can come and go as we please. So, right.
I mean, like, right. That's a vassal. Right?
Aren't you a colony?
Yeah. It's like that was Ukraine's mistake. They didn't understand that they were a vassal state. It's like, but you are, you know, the Russians can come and go as they please. So it's like that. It's like Mexico. All right. Do you think U.S. foreign policy becomes more about managing decline than maintaining dominance in recent years? I wish.
Well, it depends on which president. Yeah. I think Obama managed decline. I think Trump and Joe Biden didn't understand the limits of American power, in which case they overstepped. Look, I can tell you, when you're playing chess, your position can bear a certain amount. And oftentimes when people are premature attacks, attacking without necessarily dealing with their home front, they lose. And I'm saying this is what's going on with the U.S. The U.S. has a certain, let's say, thing that it can do with the capabilities at its disposal, whether it's economic, political, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We've reached the limits. Limits that it seems like Obama, at the very least, acknowledged in the way that he engaged. Give me your take on that, because I think I've heard Obama argued as a manager of empire decline, whereas Joe Biden and Trump didn't seem to understand that the empire was declining and acknowledging the limits in regards to policy.
I would agree with that. I mean, even though I think, and look, you know, I'm hypercritical, and I've been very hard on Obama, but I do think that was a needle he was trying. He threaded pretty brilliantly, given the role. Given the cards that he was dealt. I mean, you know, there was the Cairo speech early on in his presidency where he, you know, kind of, that's an indication, like, you know, Republicans call it the apology tour. But the truth is it was an acknowledgement of, acknowledgement of reality. And, right. You know, it's kind of like, hey, please give us a little forbearance here. It doesn't go as far as, say, De Gaulle after he returned from Algiers. To, you know, saying like, look, I fucked up. I was always like l'Algérien française forever and ever. I now know they don't want us there. And he, but you know, the French, they're better straight shooters than American imperialists. I think that's right. And look, Biden and Trump definitely. Well, Trump is a revanchist, right? I mean, he's trying to make it bigger, bigify it. More than ever, he's like literally threatened to invade Denmark. Okay, I mean, because Greenland is Denmark.
A bit. I'm here for that. I'm here for that.
So I mean, he threatened to invade Canada. Okay, yeah. So I mean, like, this is a man who he wants to expand. He wants to add stars to the flag. I think he wants more states. I think he wants. You know, he looks at. We talked a little bit about McKinley this morning. He's obsessed with William McKinley, not just because he got assassinated, but he loves McKinley's tariffs. He loves, you know, McKinley's. American Empire began under William McKinley with the Spanish-American War, 1898. I think that's what he's trying to replicate. He's like, I'm trying to bigify America.
Again, I am fine with him invading Greenland. I know I keep saying that. I'm saying it half-heartedly. But
I hope
him going, well, I'm sick of him going after like Venezuela and Iran and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sick of the Europeans standing by.
You mean you want him to pick on someone his own size for once?
Yes. And I'm sick of the Europeans looking at the United States attack these other countries without really having any major comment or pushback on the attacks on those other countries. Maybe
it would destroy NATO, which would be kind of awesome.
True. Yeah, and maybe if they got a taste of their own medicine, maybe they're not sitting there like meaning when they attacked Iran, Europe had nothing to say. Mm-hmm. And during the 12-day war, when Iran was attacked, Europe attacked Iran for being attacked, right? Yeah. So these guys, it's like, dude, you guys are so weak, such vassals. And the U.S. is now saying, we want to take it. Why not? Have at it.
NATO is dangerous. For sure. Okay,
they started a war with Ukraine with expansion. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. More questions. Okay. Osiris, thanks for the question. Hello, Ted and Jamal. Does the war in Iran affect Sudan? If the Sudanese army is backed by Saudi Arabia, the Rapid Support Force is backed by the UAE, and both are fighting Iran all at the same time. Yeah.
It's one war. It's only one war.
Yeah.
All my guests today have made that point clear. It's one war. In fact, the last guest I was talking to, David Hudayan, he was pointing out like...
So you're saying it's like World War 2.5?
Yeah. I mean, because if you look at it, the U.S. has proxies all around the world. The war in Ukraine obviously is being backed by the United States, and we've paid hundreds of billions of dollars for that particular war to go after the Russians, and we still are in that war. That includes all of Europe. If you look at the Iran thing, again, the United States backs Israel in it going after Iran. The United States aided in this case. Mm-hmm. In the case of China, there's still an economic war going on with China, where China is withholding rare earth minerals because they don't want to give the U.S. the ability to make weapons that will go after China, right? Mm-hmm. So they're supposed to meet with Xi Jinping, but that war, economic, is still going on. China backs Russia, who backs Iran. All three of these, everywhere the U.S. turns, it ends up. And when you go to Africa, what's taking place now? You had a gang of Western-backed proxy army go after one of the Sahel states. And who was it repelled by? The Russians. So like all of these things seem to be emanating from the same source of trying to maintain some kind of global hegemonic control, like this last gasp, the fight off multipolarity. Give me a take on it. Is there anything in that you disagree with?
No, I don't disagree with anything there. No, that's exactly right. And yeah. I mean, it is, by the way, I hope that I've just coined World War 2.5 there. I think that was a good call. Just think about it. I mean, Israel is currently sort of in a cold war in Syria. It was a hot war.
Yes.
Lebanon, Iran, Sudan, much of the Sahel, the Saudis are involved. The Omanis are now looking like they're at least getting a warmer relationship with Iran. I mean, this is a massive geopolitical game changer. In 6 weeks. I mean, just think about how rapidly these events are unfolding. It's breathtaking.
Yeah, Iran has become a fourth power. And what's wild, if the U.S. with a $1 trillion military budget cannot take down a regional power. And what I mean by this, before this war, the Strait of Hormuz was open. Mm-hmm. After this war, the Iranians may end up with control of the Strait of Hormuz. They've already put in regulatory protocols in order to collect tolls on the Strait of Hormuz. Mm-hmm. And if the U.S. hyperpower can't do anything about it, what does it mean about the U.S. being a hyperpower, right?
Right?
Yeah, you can murder a lot of people, but it doesn't seem like you can do anything about the principal leverage of control that Iran has effectively taken. That's astonishing. And yeah, that means something going forward. Is this the Suez Canal moment that the United States has just tripped over? I don't know.
I think that the Suez crisis ended up not having as many long-term implications as this is. I mean, that's more of a flash in the pan.
Really? I mean, that was the turnover of the British Empire effectively recognizing there's a new empire in town.
Yeah, let's face it, it was already the English Empire. I think, you know, I think the writing was on the wall, with Indian independence. And
right.
And after that, everything that follows is just, it's just.
Oh, I say
that's inevitable.
Falling down the well.
Yeah, exactly. You just haven't hit the bottom yet. Yeah.
Yeah. The man doesn't know he's dead.
Right. Yeah. Do you ever watch Tales? Not Tales from the Crypt. Tales from the Dark Side.
Yes.
So there's an episode where I think it's the guy who plays Grandpa Munster, but I could be mistaken about that. But anyway, it's called A Case of the Stubborns, and it's basically the guy. He's Grandpa has died. But he's such a stubborn bastard, he won't admit it. And he's like parts of his body are falling off. He's like covered with flies. He smells bad. But it's a case of the stubborns. I've used this analogy a bunch of times to talk about the zombie empire, but it just because it fits so well. And that's it's that phenomenon.
That's hilarious.
You know, it's
like the Roman Empire.
The Roman Empire. It's like the Roman Empire after 476 AD, right? Where it's like, yeah, they still have the Senate. It's a little shop worn. They still wear togas. They still say SPQR. The emperors have funny German names, and it's not really quite the same. But they think it. But they don't really realize it. And it's only a lot later where, like, yeah, actually, 476 is when that was over.
Yeah. Yeah, Byzantine Empire, same thing, right? Where they were like, it's like, we're still the Roman Empire. It's like, are you?
Are you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see here. JT. Okay, so let's put on Robbie. You have a question for JT, Robbie?
Yeah, I do. So you're talking about how Iran's the fourth power and how China is backing Russia and Russia is backing Iran. What are the odds do you think that Wagner is assisting in Iran, maybe with air defense, maybe with something else?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So I had Colonel Wilkinson on the show. Colonel Wilkinson made the point of saying back during Thanksgiving that the U.S. and Israel was going to attack. And he pointed out that the Russians were going to back the Iranians. And he even pointed out that there may be Russians flying those airplanes in contests with the U.S. because nobody would ever know, right? It's kind of like in Europe. How would you know if there's a European airman in that fighter craft with Ukrainian and swastikas all over it, right? You wouldn't. And so this kind of fog of war thing where it's like, okay, how invested is Russia in this war? Is it just armaments? I mean, because Iran has made the point of saying, look, we don't need you to defend us in this case. And there's reasons, historical reasons going back for distrust in this case. But obviously the Russians are helping. The Chinese are helping. How invested in the sense of are they putting men in fighter craft? Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know. Like, there's no way to know. Wilkerson seemed to believe that that could be true.
I think that the Russians are, well, we know that the Russians are giving targeting data.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it would not surprise me. Sure. I would not be surprised at all. We know that early on in the war, the Iranian Air Force, which effectively doesn't exist, so that's kind of funny, bombed U.S. military bases.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Not the Iranians that did that. And I think that what this is a case of Russia giving the United States a good taste of its own medicine for the crap we're pulling in Ukraine.
Well, they should. It's 100%. In the best interest to do so. And by the way, it was an F-5 Cold War era fighter that bombed a U.S. base, apparently the first time in God knows how long, that a fixed-wing aircraft was able to bomb an American base, a base with air defense that, for whatever particular reason, couldn't hit an old, ancient airplane.
It was the first time since the Korean War. I looked it up.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Like, what does that mean? I get, like, look, my feeling is this stuff means stuff. It's not like things just happen and they don't have any meaning associated with it, especially when people are involved. And when you're looking at, like, so wait a minute, you mean the U.S. had all of these bases and these bases had air defense and the bases, according to CBS News, emptied out? So what Iran was bombing were empty bases. And I was like, wait a minute, what do you mean the bases were empty? You had air defense at the bases, and the entire point of the base was to serve as a post of attack. And now you're telling me that Iran was able to empty out those bases and those people went to, like, hotels? That's amazing. Like, I don't know how that works. Like, that's amazing. That's all I'm saying. That's amazing.
Oh, for sure, because that would imply that the Iranians are going to give the Americans a heads up. So, oh, by the way, we're going to use the Air Force that we don't have with planes we don't have in our inventory to bomb bases with munitions that we don't have either. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't think they gave a heads up. I think they were just that bad. I think that, you know, for all of this talk about the U.S. military might and everything else, when put into the context of a modern war, they were found lacking.
100%.
And these bases were undefended. I mean, the troops were even complaining that there were no hardened shelters at the bases. So the people had to effectively flee their own military base to get out of the range of Iranian air power. It's just amazing.
I completely agree. I mean, no, the United States, we are really good about killing tribal people with sandals and AK-47s.
Yes.
But we have trouble fighting an actual military that has doctrine. And that's the problem.
Yes. Agreed.
I thought it was just as a side note to the same episode it's really interesting how carefully and this time the United States covered up the attacks on its own bases and basically pretended like they hadn't happened and Now it's only coming out now, well over a month, and like that seems to me like it's another Israeli influence, because that's Israel's point of view, right? They don't talk about like what damages have happened. They're subjected to military censorship. Even Western reporters who are stationed in Tel Aviv are not allowed to talk about it. So it just seems like, again, like stylistically, we're really in bed with the Israelis. And, you know, basically when you hang with other people, you end up doing things their way.
Yeah. Political assassinations, political killings, all that stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. Great.
All right. Let's see. Okay. This is more of a question for Robbie, but do you guys think that the holy people of the Bible is the modern state of Israel, isn't real at all? Is the church the people of the church, or is Jesus? Well, this is a Robbie question.
It's 100% the church. I mean, the Bible is very clear. So in the Old Testament, the Israelites were... They were the chosen people as part of the Abrahamic covenant. The problem is that if you go through, if you read your Bible, what happened is that they constantly rejected God. Long story short, because I want to go into a sermon, the covenant was taken away from them. Jesus made that incredibly clear when he did his parable about the hireman in the vineyard. The kingdom is taken away from you, given to others. The book of Hebrews doubles down on this. The book of Galatians doubles down on this. The book of Romans doubles down on this. It has nothing to do with ethnicity. It has nothing to do with race. Racism is condemned by the Bible because it says we're all one blood to avoid genealogies. It actually calls them foolish. To be a child of God means that you have to be forgiven for your sins. What do you have to do to be forgiven for your sins? You have to first admit that you're a sinner. And then second, all you have to do is that you just have to ask Jesus, please save me. That's literally it. There is no reaching to God. God reaches down to us. And when you do that, kind of like now John's always talking about a pardon. Now, a pardon means you're guilty of the crime, but the punishment's not enforced. When you become saved, your sins are expunged. That's why the Bible says you must be born again. It's that you never sinned, because your soul is regenerated. You're reborn. You never sinned. That's how that communion comes. That's why you become a holy person of God. It has nothing to do with your race. It has nothing to do with what country it is that you're born in. It has to do with you being humble enough to ask for the one thing only God can give you, which is his grace. That's it. That's how you get to be a holy person of God.
Robbie, I'm curious, with the White House Correspondents' Dinner shooter, he called himself the Christian, and he effectively said it was his responsibility as a Christian to not support. And yeah, I know this is a treacherous thing. I'm just curious. Since that's the way he framed himself and his duty to do something. How do you view that? I mean, when I heard that, I was like, it makes sense to me, even though obviously what he did was outlandish, or at the very least ineffective. It's not outlandish, just ineffective. Give me a take on that.
Both things are, well, at the end of the day, both things are right. So Christianity has got two different schools of thought when it comes to dealing with an enemy and dealing with the state.
Right.
First, if you have a personal enemy, as a Christian, you're actually commanded to pray for that person. That being said, we are under no obligation at all to support a system that violates God's law. So for example, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the Old Testament, when they were commanded to bow down before the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, they refused to do so, and they were punished for it because the state violated the laws of God. One of the laws of God is thou shalt not kill. Basically, you don't murder. Our country's been engaged in an industrial-scale murder now for decades. That's not something that a Christian should ever bless or give our government a pass on.
Or anyone else.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, turn the other cheek means if someone hits me, yeah, sure, I could turn my cheek and I offer you the other one. That being said,
you don't get to turn my cheek.
Right. But a Christian also, though, has an obligation to stand up and to love your neighbor as yourself and to protect those who are weaker than you.
Right.
A good example of this is in the Garden of Gethsemane. When Peter, when he cut off the soldier's ear, he wasn't aiming for the guy's ear. He was aiming for the soldier's neck. If you read your Bible,
that's what Mike Tyson said.
What Jesus said is you know, Jesus did not tell Peter, give up your sword. He said, put your sword away. If you live by the sword, you die by the sword. That's the law of sowing and reaping. So I have no problem with in the manifesto what this guy said about what he did. I think that he was foolish. I think he went about this in an incredibly stupid and foolish way. I don't think it makes any sense. And I think that's actually going to do more harm than good in the long term. But from a theological perspective, I can understand where he's coming from because I feel the exact same way.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, look, I can't really say that if he had succeeded, that it would have necessarily, it would have made him a bad person. I just think it's like, this was a plot that was almost guaranteed not to succeed, and if it succeeded, it would not have had the effect that he wanted.
No, it was doomed to fail, and if anything else, what it would have done is it would have made the Trump administration even more authoritarian than what it already is, because you are then going to put the most irrational actor in charge.
Well,
which would probably be Marco Rubio.
I'm so conflicted about this. I'm so conflicted. Because I agree with both on this. I agree. If he would have succeeded, I don't think I would have cared. I know I wouldn't have cared one iota. I would have cared about the consequences of that success, if that makes sense. It's unpredictable consequences, with one exception, that it changes nothing. Because it's not about Trump. It's about the system in play. Because the same thing was true under Joe Biden. This guy didn't go after Joe Biden. He decided to go after Trump. But he could have made that same argument after both presidents. Hell, after the last string of presidents, right? But does it change anything? No, it's not an individual thing. It's not a guy thing. It's a system thing. So no, I wouldn't have felt what I thought about it, but obviously this was practical.
One question before we move on to one of my favorite topics, capybaras. if you could administer a truth serum to the American, to registered American voters, and what percentage of them do you think would really either be neutral or happy if Trump had been assassinated?
I think Trump has got it coming to him. I think that, man.
Yeah, if anybody
he has got the blood of thousands and thousands of innocent people on his hands.
Yes,
legally. But Obama's got the blood of tens of thousands of innocent people on his. You can say Joe Biden has probably got more than both of them put together, because he actually evaded a genocide that killed, I don't know, between what?
50,000 to 100,000.
About 400,000 people, for the simple reason that the pre-war population of Gaza was 2.2 million. Now it's 1.8 million. And nobody was allowed to leave in significant numbers. So, right.
Where did those people go?
Right. I think it's probably 100,000. I think that math adds up pretty substantially. The problem is I don't think that the American people are so engaged, and I don't think it's because they don't care. I think it's because they're so beaten down economically, where they're trying to figure out a way to survive day to day. They can't think about anything bigger than the day to day. And I think that's by design. And our education system teaches people specifically, you are not allowed to think. You do as you're told, because if you're going to be a self-governing republic, that means you've got to have a thinking populace. Well, if someone thinks, they tend to act out. And if they act out because they realize they're getting screwed over, then they dose you up with Adderall. That's the problem.
What do you think, Ted? I mean, what do you think?
About what part?
If you had to put a number on.
35%.
I think it's like higher. Oh, because you think all of those people are Democrats. Basically, 35% of people that are Democrats are basically saying.
I think there's a subset of Democrats who would be uncomfortable about the whole thing, who basically don't really want the president of the United States, even if it's someone they despise, to be killed. And so, right. or who might genuinely just have some affection for Donald Trump. You know what I mean? Like,
true. Yeah, I was 35-50%, somewhere in between that, I think.
That's high. That's insane.
It is high. But I think Trump is going to go down as one of the most hated presidents in the history of presidents.
He's already at 33% for his approval
rate. Yeah, that's my point. I think there's a large percentage.
That's Nixonian.
But I agree with you. There would be a percentage that cares. And Robbie, I even agree kind of with you. I think people don't care until it affects them, in all earnestness. That's cynical. I get it. But I think that's true on the spread. Meaning if you spot check people, yeah, there'll be some people who would say, well, obviously I care about this. I mean, for God's sake, we're having this conversation now, right? Both of us care about it. One person is a Christian, the other two aren't, but both people care, everybody on this part care about it. So obviously there are going to be people who care. But for the most part, if you man to man, I think most people only care when it affects them. I mean, if you're looking at, let's look at the rich. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at Real Housewives, and they would get out their car, they would say, I'm spending $30,000 on jewelry on a weekend, I'm doing all this. Are they overtly concerned about what is happening in a political sense? Maybe if they're liberals, but even then it's diffuse. It's, oh, I need to get an electric Hummer because, you know, I care about the environment. It's like, okay, that's nice. Right? Mm-hmm. That's only the rich die young. That's, I want to live as long as I possibly can live because I'm rich and my life is fabulous. If you're getting to people who have basic needs and things that they need to be met, I don't think that stuff, I don't know. I'm more cynical on this. I think people don't care until it affects them, which is why I say if the oil price goes up, then they'll care. When people are coming back in body bags, then they care. It's why I never believed that the Gaza protests were ever going to amount to anything, because ultimately you're trying to get people to care about something that doesn't exactly directly affect them short of moral reasons. Mm-hmm. And they can ignore those moral reasons when it comes down to what they need in regards to physical matter, reality. I mean, I know that sounds bad, but I think it's true.
Well, you know, when the country was founded, originally the only people who were allowed to vote were landed men who owned property, which landed white men, because they had a vested interest because they had to pay for whatever the government did.
Right.
So, but now, though, looking at that, now it's kind of just considered shameful and all this other stuff. No, it is what it is. But so looks like Ted's over there having some fun. But
I don't know what I'm doing here.
Hey, it doesn't matter. I think what the problem is that so many people here in the United States have the idea that we have rights, but we have no responsibilities required to keep those rights. That's the problem. So, like, for example, if we had a draft, we would not be fighting all these wars, especially if women were conscripted and forced to go fight on the front lines, because women are the largest voting bloc in the country. So if you put skin in the game where everyone is involved, where everyone has to pay a price, and not just military-aged men, then maybe our country would be a lot less likely to go and start these big, stupid wars. But who can say?
Yeah. Yeah, there is something to be said about educating a population in regards to responsibility in a political sense. Meaning, yes, you're a citizen. God bless you. And yes, as a citizen, certain things are required for that citizenship. And we are going to teach these things in class. Now, that gets dicey right off the bat, right? Because the moment that you're trying to teach people something, other people are going to have some kind of feelings about what you're teaching them. But there is something to be said about teaching people government basics, this kind of understanding of political responsibility in regards to the public space. Yeah, we don't
Women being in the military, I don't mean working back in logistics or being a drone operator. I mean, you have a rifle. You're on the front lines digging a foxhole. And when the order goes to go over the top, you're going over with the boys too, baby. And you'll be catching bullets along with Billy Bob over there. Everyone has skin in the game. And if that happens, you would have a political revolution overnight, because if women stopped voting, no Democrat would ever get elected again, like ever. The Democrat Party would be dead. But the reason why we keep getting these crap, these issues is because we have so many people, not just women, but people just in general, who like the idea of the privileges that we get as Americans, but there's zero responsibility to go along with that. A vote is more powerful than a rifle, and people forget that.
Is it in a two-party system with two center-right corporate parties?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, for sure. And that's the whole problem, right? Again, yeah. That goes back to what I'm just talking about. People don't vote their interests. If people voted their interests, they would get on board with the Ted Rawl, Jamal Thomas party and start voting their interests. The problem is that people are so checked out and they put themselves in this binary choice where they let other people think for them instead of using the gray matter that the good Lord put in your skull between your ears to think for yourself. People have agency. If you lose your agency, it's because you willingly surrender it.
Yeah, but in a two-party system, how does that work? Like, meaning, if we have two parties and both of us agree, in a meaning, the moment you have a capitalist system, you've already put a box in regards to what you can do. Mm-hmm. And then you add to that two parties that are primarily overtaken with that capitalist system, less about the democratic order, but use the fig leaf of democracy in order to pretend as if this is democracy. The candidates who you get are managed. And even the boundaries that the candidates are willing to go are limited. And so, yes, I'm a Democrat and I can vote for a Democrat, but I'm typically voting against this Republican with this Democrat not fulfilling any obligation and usually lying to me in the process.
For sure.
How do you get out that box in a Democratic system that 90% of the people who are elected because of the amount of money that they spent in the race?
By voting local because they're not as controlled. So, I mean, your school board election matters more than any presidential election is ever going to matter because that's how you affect real change locally. But getting elected to your city council or your county commission or to state office is going to matter a lot more. So that's how you're able to do it. Listen, Trump did what I'm talking about on a bigger scale because he was able, through shock and awe, to borrow a Bushism, to shock the system and hijack a political party. If you're going to have a populist revolution, you've got to stop thinking in terms of the presidency and the Senate. And you've got to start thinking about your local elections. Who your county sheriff is matters a hell of a lot more than who your attorney general is. Because your sheriff can arrest the president of the United States if he breaks law in his county.
Yeah, but
your sheriff can have your ICE agents deported across the county lines. That is a power that is enshrined in the Constitution. Your local elections matter. And that's how you build it.
That they are less controlled. I mean, that's how, you know, even though he's obviously far from perfect, Bernie Sanders started on the local level as mayor of Burlington, Vermont. Okay, so let's talk about capybaras. So with this question, thank you very much for the rant from Manchild. With capybaras returning to the Little Rock Zoo after 6 years, should we just appoint them as the new official ambassadors of world peace so that they seem to get along with everyone? I don't know if everyone knows, first of all, what a capybara is.
I don't know what that is. I'm sitting here, I was like, capybara, maybe I'm missing something, and maybe I'm misheard it.
So when I was fucking around earlier, I was trying to load up a picture of a capybara. But a capybara is the world's largest rodent. They can weigh hundreds of pounds. They're very cute, I think. They live in places like Central America and Northern South America. Some people in Texas have them as pets. They're ginormous.
Rodent?
It's the biggest rodent by far in the world.
When I lived in Brazil, I ate one.
Did
really?
You?
Yeah, people do eat them. Yeah. How was it?
It was good.
The capybara is a core character in that animated movie Flood, which I strongly recommend, was up for an Oscar a couple of years ago. So capybara is a big ass animal, and there's viral images of them online hanging out with ferocious crocodiles. They can they like to stand on top of them and ride them and stuff. And crocodiles could eat them, but they don't. It's kind of like everyone digs capybaras. Everyone's like, but all other animals are like, yeah, it's capybaras, man. They're cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
We could send a capybara to Iran. I think the Iranians would first be like, what the fuck is this? Well, they would.
I don't think that's going to I don't think that's going to settle the issue, but it doesn't hurt, right?
Yes, some people have had them as pets, though. They need like their own swimming pool, basically, because they have to flop around in the water a lot. Let's see. Peter Ive, thanks so much for the $2. Maybe that F5 looked an awful lot like an SU-57.
No, right? No.
Getting back to Iran.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's just shocking. Shocking food. You think they're going to resume operations against Iran?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
I don't see how this current ceasefire can last.
I don't see how Trump pulls himself out. To be honest, I mean, he is trying to go with this idea of a blockade in order to force Iranian capitulation. Iran is not in, don't seem to be in the mindset of capitulation. That, but also, it's not like the tankers aren't going through. I mean, even the media is reporting in the West that many of the tankers for Iran are going through. The U.S. is catching some.
But they're letting most of them go because they know that they can't cut off any more oil supplies. I mean, the Americans know, like, you know, the global oil market is going to affect them. I mean, you know, Jamal, I went the other day to buy a spreader, you know, for your lawn. It's a, you know what they are. They're like cheap plastic pieces of shit, right? It's a cheap plastic piece of shit. It's a $100 cheap plastic piece of shit right now. And it's got to be because of, you know, sanctions on China coupled with like supply chain issues. I mean, I went to get jeans the other day. Obviously, most jeans, even though Levi's, I always wear Levi's. Levi's are supposedly an American brand, but you know, you and I both know they're like obviously must be made overseas, right?
Yeah.
Marianas Islands, which effectively is China, right? Even though nominally American. But the point is, like, I had a hard time getting them in my size. And the place where I went, which has an extraordinary selection, they were like, yeah, we're starting to run short on inventory. I mean, that's just started. You know, this is going to make the pandemic look like nothing. We're going to be running out of shit by the end of the summer. It's going to be like, I just read about the new folding iPhone that Apple has in the works, right? Finally, they're going to roll one out. Their biggest problem, they said, is not the fact of the price, which is going to be $2,400 to begin with. The real problem is they're not going to be able to get, they're already pre-sold. All the ones that have been that they have spots for, you're not going to be able to get it. And there's concern that, and this has happened to other cell phone companies, that they'll put it in the store, people will see it, they'll go see it, and then they'll be told that they can't get it, and they'll just forget about it and go buy another phone, and that'll depress the overall sales. You know, it's kind of like when you're an author, you don't want the great review of your book to come out in the New York Times Book Review before the book is actually in the store, because people go to the store. I saw, hey, I'd like, do you have that Ted Rall book that was in the Times Book Review? It's like, oh, it comes out next week. Oh, okay, I'll come back. They never do. Right? So you don't want that. So, I mean, the ripple effect is going to be extraordinary, and the political ramifications are going to be massive. And, you know, Trump knows that.
From your mouth to God's ears?
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be a consequence. Like, I feel like the guy who they just caught tried to shoot the president. It's like there has to be a consequence. Now, granted, from his point of view, his consequence was direct and immediate. From my point of view, it has to be systemic. It has to be something that, I don't know, gets people off their ass because it bothers them and affects them. Oh, my God, I got to pay $7 for gas. Oh, my God, what is this president doing? Oh, my God, I can't afford groceries. I don't like any of these outcomes, just to be very clear.
Yeah.
But in token, we are creating horrendous outcomes to people all across the globe. This empire is out of fucking control.
There's no doubt.
And so what is the thing that gets the American public to say, hey, this is not what we voted for, right?
No.
But this is not right. This is country is going in the wrong direction and going in the wrong direction in a way where people respond. My concern is that their response is we need to put a Democrat in office. That's my concern. That's what I feel like.
That's usually the response.
Yeah. The system needs to be discredited. It's what it boils down to. And maybe these wars, maybe this stuff affects us in a way that people actually get involved. kind of a, I don't know, man, Great Depression is last reset that I can think of. Do you think that was a reset? What do you think?
It was the beginning of a reset. You know, there was concern that communism was going to come to America, but the New Deal, I think, headed it off.
Right.
Well, it did. I mean, I guess you could say it was a reset, and that allowed the New Deal to reform American capitalism and save capitalism from itself. So right. I would agree. It was a reset. Yeah. But it wasn't a hard reset.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm thinking of New Deal Democrats that were in office for the FDR and that lasts for like 50 years. I'm thinking of domestic stuff. But that doesn't really touch the foreign wars.
That does it for today's Q&A. We'll be doing another one on Wednesday at the same time, 12 noon Eastern time. Thanks, JT. Thanks, everyone, for your questions. Always appreciate you guys. Thanks for your support of the show. Much appreciated. We will be back with regular deprogram tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, April 28th at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're here Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time with deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. All right, off we go. Let me see if I can make this work properly, because it's not that easy really to do this. Okay, let me get the closing credits. Okay, bye.
Have a good one, guys.